Not gonna name me.
Whoa!
Oh, I woke you guys up.
My goodness.
So we will open. Hi, guys. That's good afternoon.
That was like the Senate floor today when those firemen started the fire. That dance started playing with that big drum roll, and poor Sarah Gelser about passed out.
I meant to hit it hard because it was loud, but not that hard. Sorry. All right. Well, today's April 25th, 2017. We are opening the subcommittee on public safety. We will start out this morning. We'll also open a work, or this afternoon, we'll open a work session on OJD, a report on the proposed capital improvement projects. So if you guys will come on up and do that, we'll get that done and out of the way before our quorum slowly disappears.
We're disappearing?
I don't know. He is.
Oh.
Co-Chair Stark, members of the committee, my name is David Moon. I'm the Director of the Business and Fiscal Services Division at the Oregon Judicial Department. I'm here this morning to present a report to you on capital improvement changes. During the 15 legislative session, we submitted a policy action package for capital improvement funding, and we prepared a list at that time of projects. Some of those projects have not been pursued, and another project came in well under budget, and so we are proposing to use the amount of funding that's left over, $500,000, towards a repipe project for freshwater piping in Douglas County. That's something we had a show-and-tell prop yesterday, a pipe that was kind of ugly. I decided not to bring that back today.
Thank you.
For all of our health. that project is currently estimated at $500,000, and it would bring fresh water, both hot and cold, to the users of the court. And so we are requesting that you acknowledge receipt of this report, and I can take any questions.
Other questions before we have LFO give us a, I know I did it slightly out of order, but their analysis. Okay, Mr. Bender.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. The Legislative Fiscal Office recommends that you approve the request. Just to clarify, the request is to approve the use of $500,000 of state court facility and security account funds allocated to the Judicial Department in the 2015-17 biennium budget for capital improvements to the Douglas County Courthouse. These funds have already been provided to OJD in the current biennial budget, but they could, with your approval, be used for this project.
Mr. Chair, I move that we approve Legislative Fiscal Office's recommended approval of the request of the $3.5 million for county courthouse capital improvement projects that was in the 2015-17 budget.
All right, so Co-Chair Winters moves that we approval of the request. Are there any discussion, any objection? All right, so moved, and we have a carrier. Anyone want to carry it to full?
I'll take it in full.
Okay, and Senator Winters will carry it. Anything else before I close that work session?
No, sir.
Ooh. Now, close the work session gently on the request and open a public hearing on House Bill 5013, continuing with State Court Technology Fund. Take it away.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm Phil Lemon from the Judicial Department. With me here continues to be Mr. Moon. And we wanted to talk with you today about the State Court Technology Fund at your request. There are a few acronyms in here. I'm going to try like crazy to stay away from them, but they will pop up in the slides, so just be prepared. So the State Court Technology Fund is our current approach to how we fund a portion of OJD's technology services. Some 30 years ago, the legislature established the OJIN account. That OJIN was our legacy court management system that was developed in-house and served us well for quite a while, but now has been replaced by Odyssey. But we had subscriptions and paid subscribers to that system for about 30 years, so we had an OJIN account that had the subscription fees in them. In 2013, as we moved to our Odyssey system and developed more public-facing services, we renamed that OJIN account to the State Court Technology Fund, and the subscriptions that we have now are to OJASIN, the Oregon Judicial Case Information Network. So we just conform the statute. It's essentially the same thing, but it pays for a larger variety of services and has a different funding mix in it. So what it pays for, we have staff, we have equipment, we have licensing and maintenance fees, and the charges both for e-filing and e-payment go into that account. And then it contains revenues from the OJSON subscription fees, a 4.75% of statutory filing fees, and also the e-payment fees. This slide shows you some of our integrations and connections with other agencies and entities, and just shows you the wide reach of our electronic systems and the number of entities that we touch. So if you look, can you go back just a second? If you look, for example, at the jury system in the upper right of that inner box, you can see that we get voter information for the jury list from the Secretary of State. We get driver's license information, again, for the jury list from DMV. We put that into the jury system. It goes into a data warehouse, and that's how it gets distributed to our courts for their jury list. So now if we can go to the next one, please. So the highlighted boxes in this slide are related to the public-facing systems. Odyssey is the case management system for the circuit courts and the tax court. On the bottom left, ACMS is the appellate case management system, so it's a separate case management system for the Court of Appeals and Supreme Court. Again, that information goes to a data warehouse, which insulates it from the operating system and then becomes available to access to our users. So what all do we have in there? What is public access? We have five systems that provide different kinds and different levels of information to the public and to our stakeholders. The first is OJSON Online, and that again is subscription access to court case documents. So if you think of this kind of in terms of OLIS, you have the measure history and the what we call the case register. This is the listing of events. And then just as you can see amendments and testimony on OLIS, you also have that ability through your subscription to OJSON. The second function is e-filing. That is how attorneys and other litigants can get their pleadings into the courts. It goes into a separate system, and then we can create cases. You can file 24/7 anywhere with an internet connection, and then it also provides a service component, because in the courts, it's not just enough for me to file the case and file the pleading with the court. I have to serve the opposing party. And so e-file provides an electronic mechanism to do that as well, which is also a convenience and a cost saver for the litigants. The third component is iForms. We've talked about these intelligent forms before. If for those, we talked about TurboTax and how you take an interview and then that translate that information into the appropriate forms. This is a parallel process for the courts. And so in a variety of case types, we have these online interviews that people primarily who do not have attorneys can take these interviews, input that information, and then that gets put into the proper court forms and can be e-filed or otherwise presented to the court. The fourth aspect is e-pay. I think that's fairly self-explanatory. If you get, we're the municipal court in Portland, so if you get a parking ticket in Portland, if you get a traffic citation anywhere in the state and you're cited into circuit court, you can go online and make that payment without having to write a check or go to the court. And the last part is our public access system. This is free access to court calendars, and there's an online searching function. And so just a little more detail. The court calendars, again, you can go in. If you want to know what cases a judge has on a particular day, you can go and search that. If you want to go online and see what I have, either for parking tickets in state courts or traffic tickets, that's there for you as well. And so that's, again, a free online access to calendars and also searchable access to the basic case information and circuit and tax courts. We do not have the appellate calendars in the same system, but those are available through those courts separately. So you can go online and see if you want to hear what oral arguments are being held in the Court of Appeals on this date. That is there as well for you. E-pay, again, is online payments of fees and fines. The money itself goes into either the general fund or the criminal fine account. The person paying the fine also pays a $1.50 transaction fee that's charged by the vendor. That money goes into the tech fund, and we use that to pay the vendor. But you can see that we pretty consistently run between $1.5 million and $2 million per month collected through the e-payment system. There is some seasonal variation, and you can also see that, for example, when Multnomah develops a new process to push a bunch of cases into the system, we get a surge of revenue from that.
And Coach Winters.
Thank you. Is there any other revenue that the vendor receives besides the $1.50?
From e-payment?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, no.
Correct.
And what the major improvement we are looking at from the e-payment system right now is to allow partial payments on a fine. Right now, it's either you pay the whole thing, or if you have a payment plan already set up, you can pay with that. But we're trying to adjust the system. So if you only have the ability to pay right now a partial piece of that fine, that we would allow you to do that online as opposed to dealing with calling the court and dealing with court staff.
Rep. Sanchez.
So still not the capacity, or will we ever get the capacity to say, I didn't do it. I'll pay you, but I didn't do it, and I want to argue the point online. Because I know you can't do that right now. You have to just pay and, you know, all good.
I don't know the answer to that, Rep. Sanchez.
Okay.
I don't know.
It's a no contest.
I know it's a no contest at this point. Is there ever going to be a capacity, or is that something we're looking at?
Let me talk to our people, and we'll get back to you on that.
Because I would really like that.
Coach Winters?
Do you have an average amount of fines on average?
It would vary by case type. Mr. Co-Chair, Senator, that would vary by case type. I'm sure we could get you some. You just wanted to look at the average
right.
amount.
I raise that since you're talking about maybe setting up a payment system, that there must be some reason that one would need to do that.
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Winters, yes. Under any collection system, whether you're dealing with a Department of Revenue or a private collection company or the courts, we can set you up with a payment plan that's an agreed-upon amount, and as long as you're current on that, you are not delinquent. If you quit paying on that for whatever reason, then you become delinquent, and the courts quit collecting, and we ask Department of Revenue or a private collection firm to do that. So it's not unusual at all for people not to be able to pay their complete fine up front and are on a payment plan and do so over time. But we'd be glad to get you kind of what that looks like for various case types.
Well, because I was thinking if I owed you $20 and then I wanted to get on a payment plan for pay you about $2 a month.
That's wrong.
I don't know if that really pencil out for you, Senator, but
$24.
Well, on her legislative salary.
So the next system is what we call guidance file. These are the I-forms. And these are online, they're interview-based, and they are primarily for self-represented filers. And so what we do is we take the legal requirements of the information to be submitted to a court in that case type, we write the logic, we develop the interview, and then what we have done is gone out and worked with landlords and debt collectors and legal aid to give these a test run to make sure that they are worded and understandable appropriately for the audience that we're dealing with. And then we've launched them in a variety of case types, starting with small claims and landlord-tenant, and now moving on to a variety of family law cases, and that's our primary focus right now, is expanding the number and type of forms that are available in those family law cases. And because that's an area where we have so many litigants who are not represented by attorneys. So these are provided at no charge to the user. They can be e-filed through our system. They help with our efforts to promote statewide consistency because they can be accepted in any court throughout the state. We basically own that process, so we can create the forms. If and when the law changes, we can respond on a timely basis and modify the forms and get those right out there. So we are very pleased with the system and think it's going to be a huge improvement for self-represented litigants. And this shows you our interviews that have been completed over the last year and a half. As you can see, when we started out with small claims and landlord-tenant only, we were between 200 and 300 a month for quite a while. And then once we hit the family law packets in October of 16, so over the last 6 months, we've seen very steady and sharp increases in the use of those systems. So we're having good feedback with that. I think the courts are happy. I think the litigants are happy. And it's a very good value for the state and for the litigants themselves.
Okay. Did you have something?
No, I'm looking at the screen. Right. Thank you.
And then we have e-filing. And again, this allows litigants to file their pleadings from any location with an internet connection 24/7, so you don't have the mad rush to the courthouse, you don't have huge packets coming into the courthouse, you don't have to make all those copies, you do an e-filing and it comes in. E-filing is mandatory for bar members. It is available to other litigants. We have a very extensive system of online training, online help, as well as in-person assistance. And the other thing that we learned quite dramatically, I think, as we went through this process, is the number of attorneys who practice in multiple counties. Because we started getting feedback saying, well, why can I file this pleading in this format in County A, and when I try to do the same thing in County B, it gets rejected. And so that, again, just drove home for us the importance of consistent business processes, which is both a policy matter in OJD and then working with the system to make sure that it's configured to allow that. The volume, as you'll see in a moment, is growing very rapidly. We are charged $5 per envelope right now, and we are our contract expires in the middle of next year, and we are currently negotiating with a vendor to move to a flat fee. So instead of $5 an envelope, we would agree on a flat dollar amount that would be paid on an annual basis and try to lock that in. I don't know that we'll be able to reduce our costs immediately, but as we see the e-filing system growing pretty dramatically in the coming years, it'll certainly be a cost containment measure.
Can we follow back up on the contract with, it's Tyler, right?
Yes.
And that $5 envelope fee, and it is, as you say, open up for renegotiation at this point.
Next year it expires.
Mm-hmm. But next year it expires. Does the entire contract expires or just this part of the contract?
The e-filing cost, yes.
Is that an opportunity for us to negotiate downward?
It is, and we are. Excuse me, Mr. Co-Chair. It is an opportunity, and we're trying to take advantage of that right now. Tyler has been a little reluctant to – Tyler is our vendor. They have been a little reluctant to move to a flat fee model before we'd fully implemented e-filing, and they had some idea what the volume was going to be. They are now more interested in that. They have submitted us a proposal. At first blood, we just got it last week, 2 weeks ago. We're still looking at that. It doesn't, at first blush, reduce our costs right now, but again, we expect to see dramatic growth, and they are willing to have that be the flat amount for up to 5 years. And so, again, even if we can't negotiate a reduced amount, we believe it's a good cost containment measure that will be very important for us and our users.
How much follow? How much is what we're doing entering the system their ownership, or is it totally their ownership?
Mr. Chair,
or do we own that part of the portal?
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, is their system, and that we basically pay to use it.
So we're kind of on the hook with them for life?
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, I don't know for life, but yes, that's our primary entrance into the system.
Madam Chair, Mr. Lemon, if I understand you correctly, this is essentially software as a service. Is that correct?
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Steiner Hayward, yes.
Yeah, so it's analogous, Senator, to what we've done in DOR with the commercial office self system that we implemented with FastX, as you know. And the interesting question does become, if these companies don't follow through, they don't evolve the way you want them to. But, Mr. Lemon, in the case of the work that DOR has done, this software solution that they've been implementing is used by 20 other states, give or take. So it's unlikely that the company's going to go belly up or decide that they don't want to innovate. Is the same true for this system?
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Steiner Hayward, yes. At the time we started with Odyssey, I think we were the sixth state, entire state, to use it. There were some large, small, there like Dallas, Miami, Las Vegas.
Right.
Those court systems were using Tyler. They are now, I don't recall the exact number, but they are in California, they are in Washington, they are in Idaho, Maryland,
right,
and many, many more states.
Thank you.
So if you go to the next slide, this will show you the growth in e-filings that I was referring to. When we started in 2014, we had just shy of 90,000 e-filings, which is about 7,000 a month. In 2015, as Multnomah County came online and we had more and more courts come online, we were up to almost 900,000 e-filings, which is 75,000 per month. And as you can see, in 2016, we're almost at 1.4 million e-filings, and As of March, we were receiving 144,000 e-filed documents per month. So that shows, and that not all of these, again, these are the number of documents filed. We can put multiple documents in an envelope. So I don't want you to confuse the math that these are the number of $5 charges that we're incurring. But this just shows you the dramatic growth. So we think even if we cannot reduce the amount that we're paying now to cap that growth or to limit that will be a very important step for the stakeholders. The other main portion is the is OJSON, the Oregon Judicial Case Information Network. And again, that is access to the documents that is filed in the court. So when if you have an OJSON subscription, you log in, you can, for example, go to a specific court and look at every civil case, every criminal case. You can do all locations if you want to search by a defendant and go statewide, or if that person has any criminal cases in Multnomah County, it has a very person-specific search function, and that is by subscription. The online access is primarily provided to attorneys, but we also provide it to public safety entities such as law enforcement, adult corrections, juvenile corrections, human service entities like DHS and CASAs, and the private sector. Again, primarily attorneys, but also financial institutions, private investigators, title companies, the news media, and we have a variety, and I'll show you a little more information on that.
Mr. Chair, but unlike the private sector actually makes a contribution that they pay into the system.
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Winters, yes, they pay a subscription fee.
Right, and the public side does not.
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Winters, that is correct. We do not charge them for access to this system.
So have you looked at it? I'm just thinking of utilization of services similar to what we would be utilizing, whether it was the Attorney General's office or whether it would be DAS when we provide. So I'm just thinking through because as cost and budgetary items go up, you know, it's kind of like looking and trying to see fairness.
If I can just hold off to answer, giving you a more complete answer in just a couple slides, and that'll kind of help illustrate what we're talking about.
Thank you.
And so you, no charge to state and local government agencies, paid access to private entities. So now let's talk about your question, Senator. These are the external users who do not pay for their subscription access. There's about 5,000 of them, which is about 60% of our total external users to this system. So there's, you can kind of slice and dice these numbers a number of different ways, but public safety generally is about 60% of these non-paying users. So that includes prosecutor offices, that includes law enforcement, juvenile corrections, community corrections. We also provide this at no charge to attorneys who contract with Indigent Defense Services. So if a majority of their practice is contractual indigent defense, we do not charge them for access to this system. If you look at it for state and local government, about 40% of these entities are local government entities. And then our biggest single user is the Department of Justice, and you can see that they have 17% of our logins for these external non-paying subscribers. So what to answer your question, Senator Winters, there's obviously a multitude of different ways we could do this. We have tried to avoid charging those public entities specifically for the services. One of the things that we are proposing is a $5 increase in violation fines because the majority of these subscriptions come from the public safety system and public safety entities. That's a proxy user fee, if you will, to help fund these systems. We can look at a state agency assessment, but again, because 40% of these entities are local governments, you know, we could, I suppose, look at DPSST and charge them for all the law enforcement folks and DOC for all the community corrections folks, but that gets a little tenuous, and I'm not sure we'd really want to go that way, but if you have direction on things you'd like us to explore, we'd certainly be welcome to do that.
Sanchez?
Miscellaneous. All, right? That. Miscellaneous. What is miscellaneous?
Oh, we're looking at the private.
It's in the private, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's probably a bunch. I don't know the answer to that. I can get you some examples if you'd like.
Just interested, if those are those private entities? Private entities in terms of are they a business? Are they individuals? Are they individual lawyers possibly?
Mr. Co-Chair, Rep. Sanchez, they are not attorneys. Attorneys are all in the big pie group there.
Okay.
In order to get a subscription access, you have to have a recognized business interest for this court information.
Okay.
And so these are all private entities, for-profit, and I'll get you some examples of that. But the major components are the private investigators and people using court information for background checks.
Okay.
So if you're not an attorney, that's the next biggest use. And then, as you can see, private companies use this to search for judgments where people owe money that might interfere with a title or a lien.
Mm-hmm.
We have news media subscribers, banks and financial institutions. So it's a really... Once you get past attorneys, it's a really diverse mix of people. But if you like some of the outliers, we'd be glad to do that.
I'm curious as to what that looks
okay.
like. Thank you.
So then we start talking dollars. We have a variety of cost increases in the tech fund that we'd like to cover in 17, 19, and beyond. The first, as we've talked about, is the e-filing charges. Though that is now a $5 per envelope charge, it is paid by in cases where there is a filing fee involved. So if it's a public body involved in civil litigation, they do not pay. We are not charged for that. They do not need to pay for that. If a litigant has a fee waiver in a case, we are not charged for that filing. We do not have to pay for that filing. But our paid filings are going up, and we need to put more money into that system so we can continue to pay that fee on behalf of the litigant. And if we don't have the money, the charge is still there, and we have a bit of a problem to work through. So we have proposed a 5% increase in the statutory filing fees to put into the tech fund to pay for this service. The second major cost is continuing staff to support the system. These are both straight technology positions, so server support on our help desk, people who test the patches and fixes and upgrades to make sure that they're not going to crash the system and they integrate with what we have done. We have people in our business office who both work with customers and clients when they have issues with the OJSON system, and then we have accounting staff who process the transactions for them. And then the bulk of these positions is in our office that works on, that supports the central elements, the core elements of what these systems are able to do. So these are the staff that analyze the business processes that drive a more consistent approach throughout the state. They run the e-filing system and work with people on problems, both problem solving and also gathering information on improvements and see what we can do for those things. We have the staff who does the I-forms, who does the legal research, develops the interviews, prepares the forms, and we go out and test those. And our only staff who is able to prepare reports, both for internal management and our KPMs that we report to you, is part of this package that is funded through the tech fund. Then the last major item is the software licensing and maintenance and services and supplies. That includes the maintenance fee that is new in this coming biennium. It's about $2.3 million in 17-19, and then also hardware upgrades, which is about $1.1 million. So all told, we're looking at a deficit of about $8 million in 17-19 and about $10.5 million in 19-21 as these costs continue to increase. So that's what we are looking to cover this session.
Mr. Chair, on the software license and the maintenance cost, can you provide it to Mr. Bender, and that how does it vary from our previous biennium, so we can look at actually the increase that's taking place on this side? And I know you're negotiating part of this, but how much will your negotiation increase? Is it 5%, 10%, 3%? What's the increase in the cost?
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Winters, this is a new charge. We are under warranty during the implementation phase, so this is when our initial payments start for these maintenance fees. It is about $1.6 million a year. We have those negotiated those for the next 3 years, and then we have a CPI, an inflation maximum on those, but I think we have those prepared for the next 3 years. Is that correct? Yeah.
Can you, and I won't take the time today, but actually, I don't know if you have that information, Mr. Bender.
I think they have, but they've provided that to me, but I would like to see that to make sure I have the most current information.
I believe we submitted that at the end after phase one.
And Representative Sanchez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm curious, having experienced something of a same type of thing, you get an online service, over time the platform changes or upgrades are needed or whatever. I'm assuming they're all in for what you're saying for the next 3 years. Is there an expectation that that will kind of grow significantly more after that time? Do we?
It's limited to the CPI growth.
I believe it's limited. The way our contract, I'm looking at our CIO just for confirmation here, excuse me. But we have the first three annual amounts locked in, and then the contract continues to call for a maximum CPI growth of 5%.
Okay.
So I don't know that we have the actual amounts beyond the first 3 years, but we have a hard cap on the growth of those.
Yeah.
Is that okay? Yes, that's correct.
We were just talking about 5% CPI is a nice bit of growth, depending on what is in the economy, any moment in time. I know Mr. Bender is looking up to see if we have those documents, because I'm interested in that growth pattern, and I think that others here are interested in that growth pattern. So, any information longitudinally that you can provide us would be actually appreciated.
So we talked about the component cost increases. We have proposed a funding solution for this. It is not obviously etched in stone. It requires legislative approval in a number of areas. But what we have proposed is a 5% increase in civil filing fees. That would pay the entire increase of the e-filing system and also a proportional share of the software licensing, supplies, and staffing costs. So that is House Bill 2795A. That received a due pass recommendation from House Judiciary and is in Ways and Means, and so you have the ability to work that when you are so inclined. The 5% increase.
What happens if we don't pass 2795?
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Winters, my guess is that we will either look for an alternative funding source with you, or we will be back talking to you very shortly about how we deal with that shortfall. On the e-filing, I should add that, again, the requirement that attorneys e-file their cases into circuit and tax court is mandatory. And so if OJD does not have the money to pay for the vendor charges on the behalf of the litigants, then the litigants would still have to get through that system and likely have to pay that $5 transaction fee individually, which is how we came up. We wanted to avoid that in the first place, and so that was the agreement in 2014, was to raise filing fees to pay sufficient for that transaction fee, so OJD would pay it, and it would be all behind the curtain, and the litigants would not have to write that extra $5 check every time they e-file something. Again, to provide a payment source for many of the public safety entities and other public users who are not currently being charged for those services, we are proposing in House Bill 2797 a $5 increase in violation fines. That would be imposed not only in state circuit courts, but also in municipal and justice courts. And again, the rationale being that these are city and county agencies that are big users of this system, so we would ask city and county courts to contribute to that process as well. That is not basically applied to the e-filing cost, but plays for the licensing and supplies and staffing that we talked about earlier. The last leg of the stool that we have proposed is an increase in user fees and the subscription fees, about $1.5 million. We would look at raising both the rates of the bulk data providers. So these are people who buy big gulps of OJD data and then repackage it and sell it, primarily for background checks, and then also for the individual users such as law firms, title companies, and others. So that would give us sufficient revenue in 17-19, and then because of the lag, the filing fee increase would take effect as proposed in October of this year. The fine increase would take effect in January of 2018, and so we would have between, 21 and 18 months of revenue. So once you get into a 24-month revenue situation, that would help us cover the increase in the deficit that we're projecting for 19-21. So we believe that this change would keep us solvent for another 4 years. I should also add that we do not have consensus support from all our stakeholders yet on these fee and fine increases. We are working with them to see what, I mean, other than nobody wants to pay for as much as they absolutely, unless they absolutely have to. So we will be talking with the bar and the trial lawyers and the defense counsel, the debt collectors, and other folks just to make sure that, we're taking their concerns into consideration. If there is a better way to fund these, then we'd love to bring back to you a consensus proposal.
Senator Steiner Hayward.
Thank you. Mr. Lemon, I get it. Nobody likes their fees increased. I guess the question that I would ask and that I would ask if you're asking them is, how much money are you saving them? Mm-hmm. I mean, how much time are you saving them from having to mail or schlep stuff to the courthouse? How much money are you saving them with copier expenses? How many staff positions do they not need to fill because people can e-file? And I get it's expensive, but honest to goodness, they ought to be thanking you to high heavens for implementing this, because I have plenty of friends who are attorneys, and they talk about the benefit that this has created for their practices. Mm-hmm. So I get it, but I do think you have some pretty good leverage, because this has made their lives a lot better and probably a lot cheaper in a lot of ways.
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Steiner Hayward, that's what we would like to think, and we do have some evidence to support that. When we were closing out the project in May of 2016, our quality assurance consultant arranged to do a survey through the Oregon State Bar. And so one of the questions we asked was, has e-filing and e-court increased your productivity? Has it reduced your costs? And so we were still in the rolling out stage of that. We had a lot of new users in fairly large courts who really weren't used to the system, but we were getting 60% approval in terms of, we like it, it's a good system, it's an improvement, it makes us more efficient and productive. It was about 40-some percent who said it actually saved them money. And so that's just, again, the people who responded to the survey. It's not all that scientific, but that shows you a significant chunk of people pretty quickly saw an immediate benefit.
And that's just
them.
In the roll-up, the start-out period.
Yes.
Now that they're comfortable with it. I mean, if you just even counted the number of pages of paper that ended up in the courts every year that aren't coming there now because everybody's working off electronic documents.
Well, and
I know how much Kinko's charges me to do copies, so.
And the 445 sprints to the courthouse, yes.
Right, exactly.
Senator Winters.
I think the issue before us is not that the e-court system has not helped to not only facilitate and make more timely transactions and what with the courts and what have you, and also the paperwork issue. The issue now becomes the equity or the fairness in that. That is distributed throughout the system. So, with that and stakeholders, and I do applaud that you do continue to work with those stakeholders, because we are hearing from some of them with respect to this particular issue.
So, starting to wrap up here, we believe the e-court system has brought significant benefits not just to the courts but also to the general public and to our litigants and stakeholders. Again, through the e-filing, the access to court calendars and case documents, the general consistency that is brought to the court, we believe is a benefit not only to the courts internally but to you as we try to provide you with data. And the more consistent our practices are, the more consistent and better our data is, that we can have a discussion with increasing confidence that this is actually how it's happening out in the courts. The intelligent forms provide litigants a very effective means to participate in the court process without getting turned around and saying, no, you didn't do this right, no, we need this, no, you can't do that, we can't schedule your hearing until we get this. And so I think that just as a time saver and frustration factor is a big improvement. We have better integrations to send and receive information, and it's a person-based system. So again, if you want to see if your next door neighbor has ever filed a small claim before, you have the ability to do that. For the public, again, it creates a more efficient and effective court system. We have the e-pay process. It is a more secure system because of the security features we have in OJSON and in our Odyssey system. We talked about the I-forms and the access to court calendars. And so we have both direct services such as e-filing. We have indirect services such as our business processes and reporting and training. It takes a tremendous amount to run a technology system like this, and that is funded out of the tech fund. And I'm not sure I said this, but I'll repeat it again. Only about 20% of our technology expenditures are funded through this technology fund. So we still have a wide array of services that are not being funded by users in any form and is just part of our base budget. And then finally, to answer Senator Winter's question, if we don't get some of this money, some of these things might or would happen. Litigants would pay their $5 e-filing fee directly. We would lose at least some ability to maintain our system with patches and fixes and upgrades. Our ability to create new I-forms or even maintain the ones we have would be damaged. Our help desk, about 60% of calls to our help desk come from external users. And so that's a very important service that we provide and would like to continue. We have the document access and then just the system-wide things about business processes, documentation, the loss of training. So if you have other questions, we'd be glad to answer them, but that is our presentation.
I do have a follow-up because I am trying to go back and sort in my mind, and it's a historical question. Of how many states were actually under contract with at the same time that we were with Tyler, the software issue? Because I know that you said that they have grown and expanded beyond the state of Oregon.
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Winters, I believe we were the sixth state in the country.
So they've got quite a few more.
So
than
they've, well, I don't recall a count, but they are also moving into much larger states. Again, Washington, California. And so we, I think, kind of in some ways hit the sweet spot in terms of getting in there while they're rising, but before they got very big. And frankly, the Oregon has, we bought the full suite of services, and other states were kind of picking and choosing. So we were able not only to, I mean, it's the good and the bad side of being the guinea pig and out the first in line. You get to shape and direct a lot of the services that they do, but you're also experimenting to a fair amount. But so I think we got a benefit from doing that. We had some fits and starts, but we successfully pulled it off on time and under budget. We think we have a pretty good working system right now.
Thank you.
Other questions? Any other comments or thoughts for the day?
I do have an answer for Representative Sanchez, if I may. You wanted the unusual one, so I'm going to give you some. All That Glitters Jewelry.
Oh, my God.
Far West Steel, Flying Bar Ranch, Intel Corp, the Humane Society, the Office Nanny, Inc. And so some of these, I think for Intel, it's probably an HR office where they can run background checks, but that's a sample of your miscellaneous.
All That Glitters is a pawn shop.
Yes, All That Glitter was looking for my gold.
All right.
Wow.
Okay. Anything else for the good of the order? Tomorrow we will have Oregon State Police for phase two. And on that, we will gently close today's hearing.
Poor Representative Stark, that's ought to go down.
Hearing.
Poor Representative Stark, that's ought to go down.